This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
This is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. I'm in the studios here at 1021 East Broad Street with Jerry Bello, the online editor of the ColumbusFreePress.com. And they published some interesting stories, at least from my perspective, this week. One of them is an update on Beaver Creek. And as I understand it, the video was finally released by the Attorney General's office. What can you tell us about the Beaver Creek shooting, Jerry Bello?
Well, now that I'm not being a factual reporter and you ask me what I can tell you, they murdered that guy.
Okay, and by that, what's your proof that they murdered the black man in the Walmart in Beaver Creek?
I saw the video and that looks like murder to me.
Okay, what makes it seem like murder?
The cop ran in a combat stance and shot him. The end.
Well, he warned him, didn't he? He told him, gave him a chance to surrender, according to the tape.
If you call that a chance, you should play the lottery very often.
So what'd you see when you look at that tape?
I saw a man die. I saw a man hear a voice turn while he was on the phone, turn his head and get blown away.
Well, where was he shot?
According to the autopsy, he was shot in the rear of the upper left arm and through the side. The bullet pierced his liver and he bled to death, dead before he hit the hospital.
Was there some controversy about the 911 call? Because there was a 911 call that said he was a threat. What was he doing that made him a threat?
Being black?
And part of your article goes into that, sort of shopping while black. But clearly he did something else. Did he not simply have merchandise commonly sold at Walmart in his possession?
Yeah, it looks like he was carrying around a pellet gun that he was going to buy.
But the pellet gun was for sale at the store.
Yeah.
And do you remember what happened with the 911 call? What was it that was so controversial about that?
The 911 caller allegedly claimed that he was waving the gun around. It looks like he's going to load it. It looks like an assault rifle. And the videotape clearly shows that he's not doing that. The videotape shows people shopping near him and not even noticing that he's there. Like, I can see a family in that aisle. He was in the toy aisle. I saw a family, like, wander in, put some stuff in their cart and drive off with that, and cart off. I don't know, do you drive a cart or push it or what? And cart off without, I don't even think, knowing he was there.
So, the murder of John Crawford, the man who is the victim in Beaver Creek, in this Walmart, which has spawned demonstrations, although not on the scale of Ferguson, has caused controversy and protest. And one of the things, and you dealt with in a Free Press story, if people go to ColumbusFreePress.com, the question of the special prosecutor who brought the charges that were not accepted by the grand jury. What can you tell us about the special prosecutor that tried to get an indictment in the needless death of John Crawford shopping at a Walmart?
Well, when he was younger, maybe he took up boxing, because it looks like he took a dive again, and it looks like he's got a history of that to me. You want to rig a boxing match, bring that guy. He'll take a dive.
So why do you say that? What proof do you have to say that you think he took a dive?
Well, there's the famous quote from the Bonfire of the Vanities that a good prosecutor could get a ham sandwich indicted for murder in front of a grand jury. So there's that. An indictment is not a conviction. It's just there's enough here that we can bring it to trial. A grand jury only sees evidence that that the prosecutor presents to it. There's no defense attorney there. There's no opposition. It's a prosecutor presenting evidence. The prosecutor gets to choose the evidence. The prosecutor guides. You can... An indictment is not a difficult thing to get.
Well, who was this prosecutor? Why should we be concerned?
His name was Mark Pipemeyer. Is Mark Pipemeyer. In the Timothy Thomas case, back 13 years ago, where another young black man was shot running from the police because he was about to be arrested for an unpaid seatbelt ticket. He was shot in the back and killed. That spawned riots all over Cincinnati. Mark Pipemeyer managed to secure the indictment but not secure the conviction. He was also the prosecutor in the Lucasville murder trials, and he destroyed evidence and altered evidence in those trials, thus making the appeals incredibly difficult. I can and have unhesitatingly referred to him as a prosecutorial fixer.
And do you think that's why he was chosen by Mike DeWine? Is there any conflicts of interest there?
It's Greene County and it's Mike DeWine.
Meaning?
Mike DeWine is from Greene County. His family has always been from Greene County. His family has lived in Greene County since before the Civil War.
Okay. Just living there, does that mean there's a fix-in?
Mike DeWine was the district attorney in Greene County.
Okay.
His daughter works for the district attorney's office in Greene County.
Works now?
Yes, now.
Currently.
Currently.
So his daughter works for the county prosecutor.
Yes. His cousin represented that congressional district. His brother-in-law is a... His brother-in-law is a township trustee in one of the townships in Greene County. Greene County is Mike DeWine's political power base, always has been.
Mm-hmm.
That's the center. His family is the political machine, is the Republican political machine of that county.
All right, we're talking about the death of John Crawford in Beaver Creek, Ohio. A man who picked up was it a air pistol?
No, it's a pellet gun. It's a .11. It's a pump function. So there's no CO2 cartridge. .117 pellet gun, a BB gun, a varmint gun.
Okay,
A squirrel
he had a
gun.
BB gun, a pump.
You pump it up and
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, having played with one of those as a child.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
It could be true in some cases, but not worth the police shooting you. And he had no BBs. The gun obviously wasn't loaded.
The gun was pointed at the ground. He wasn't even treating it like a gun. He was kind of like sauntering about with it and aimlessly
talking
on the phone.
Were there BBs in it, cocked and ready to go?
At no time in the videotape did he load it. I mean, my basic understanding of gun safety is all guns are loaded until you physically verify otherwise, but I did not see from the videotape him load the weapon, if you even want to call that a weapon.
All right. That's the case of John Crawford. And if you want to see the video, that's at the ColumbusFreePress.com website, is it not?
It is, and the one thing that I pointed out in the article that I'd like to point out on the radio is, had that been a real gun, you know, say, like the AR-15 that John Crawford was murdered with, had he walked into Walmart with that slung over his shoulder, loaded in a round chambered, that would be legal in the state of Ohio.
So he could have walked into Walmart with an AK or an AR-15,
yeah,
and it would not have broken any laws.
No, we're in an open carry state.
All right. And again, John Crawford, to remind our listeners, the police were not indicted for any crime. And you're suggesting that there was a political fixer brought in by Attorney General Mike DeWine.
I'm not suggesting it. I'm saying it right out.
Okay, it's Bob Trace here talking with Jerry Bello of the ColumbusFreePress.com. And got a new issue coming out. By the way, any of the listeners out there, if you come to Shadowbox Theater on Tuesday, hopefully you'll be hearing this on Monday, the 29th of September. If you hear it, we'll be having the Columbus Free Press relaunch party from 5 to 10 p.m. at Shadowbox Theater, 503 South Front Street. Again, we've been speaking truth to power since 1970. There'll be some interesting bands there, including one of my favorite, Miller Kelton. And, of course, Dr. X will be there, and our good friend Dan Dugan will be doing the emceeing. So come on out. We'll have some awards will be given to people in the community for their activism. We'll be talking about the future of the Free Press, which is a monthly, and outline our plan, how we'd like to bring it back perhaps more frequently. So if you support the Columbus Free Press, your alternative, the only real alternative in town to the Wolf family monopoly, come to the Columbus Free Press relaunch party Tuesday, September 30th, 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Shadowbox Theater. There'll be bands there. There'll be actually a comedian. And we'll be honoring activists as well. Hope to see you there. Shadowbox Theater, 5 p.m. Tuesday, September 30th, 503 South Front Street.
No Beatles reunion, Bob?
Well, you know, I wish, but I would settle for a reunion of a lot of the old editors and readers of the Free Press, because as we like to say, now more than ever, a free press is needed. And one of the stories that makes that true, from my perspective, is a story that will be coming out on Thursday, 2 days later, when the October Free Press comes out. We'll be taking an in-depth look at e-polling books. And you wrote that story after going down and seeing the new technology available for voting. Do you have any concerns with the e-polling books?
How long is this show?
Well, it's a half hour, is it not?
I've got some concerns. Yeah, I saw the new tech. Well, first of all, let's not go ahead and call it new technology. It's an Oracle database running on an Android tablet. So we're being very charitable calling it new technology. It's cobbled together older technologies.
But it'll be newly introduced for the most part into Ohio precincts and wards in this election, will it not?
Yes, it is new here. I went to the Board of Voting Machine Examiners meeting. I saw a number of offerings. I only addressed in the article the offering from the industry leader, ES&S, even though there were other vendors there offering their own e-poll books. All the offerings passed, but it was clear that for ES&S, it was an hour and a half long sales pitch rather than a does your stuff work.
And what's your criticism of these e-polling books from ES&S? But before you go there, let me remind readers that you're listening to WCRS 98.3, 102.1, your community radio. You're listening to me, Bob Fitrakis, bringing you the other side of the news. What's wrong, if anything, with these new shiny, exciting e-polling books where they're going to have everyone's name and help us vote?
It was a difficult article to write, Bob, because when you say what's wrong with them, I'm at a loss where to start. If you combine them with other technologies that we know are implemented, they have the potential to compromise the secrecy of the ballot.
Whoa. You're telling me this new technology could compromise the sacred secrecy of the American ballot?
Yeah.
How?
Okay.
Convince me.
If you have a county tabulator,
all right,
that keeps a running total by race and by precinct,
okay,
and by candidate, and it updates that every 15 minutes, and it takes somebody about 5 minutes to vote, and there's one voting machine per precinct in a multi-precinct polling place, which is roughly average, I've got about 3 votes per machine per report.
Mm-hmm.
If the e-poll book knows who voted and updates that every 15 minutes, if I correlate, I know how many votes were cast for who in a 15-minute period, and I know which 3 people were casting those votes. Based on that...
But wouldn't the e-polling book have to be actually linked to something else in some way to provide that kind of data, that specifically?
It's linked to everything and everyone in one way or another. First of all, it transmits your ballot size via Bluetooth, which, you know, my phone can listen to, your phone can listen to. You know, almost everything's Bluetooth enabled these days.
So
it's transmitting your ballot style to the voting machine via Bluetooth.
And why does it need to transfer your ballot style?
That's an excellent question. I guess you could just bring that, you know, a poll worker could do that manually for you, or your ballot style should be the same for everybody in a precinct unless you're under 17. Or it's a primary. And if it's a primary, then have to segregate the voting machines based on party.
Okay, so the ballot style is there because we all don't vote for the same people, even though we're in the same area?
Well, some people, based on where you are, you may or may not be eligible to vote for a certain ballot issue or initiative. Mm-hmm. Or if you're 17, you may be able to vote in some races, but not others, but not ballot initiatives. If it's a primary, you can only vote in the primary for the party that you're already affiliated with, or you affiliate with a party by voting in its primary. That is what ballot style means.
Okay, so these things can be transmitted wireless, is what you're saying?
Yeah, they're using Bluetooth, which is hackable. Now, the polling books, there's multiple polling books in a big polling place. They're talking to each other through Bluetooth. They are talking to the county voting registration servers, one normal, one backup. They are doing that over the internet. If there is no internet access, these things are cellular capable, so they create their own Wi-Fi hotspot. Now, they are also backing up to the Amazon cloud, and so are the county voter registration servers and the county voter registration backup server. For someone with some computer security ability and malicious intent, Mickey Mouse just waved his hand and said, "Welcome to Disney World." The ways that anybody can break into this thing, like, I can use an SD card to attack the machine directly. I can use a thumb drive to attack the machine directly. I can attack the machine directly through Bluetooth. I can attack the DRE, voting machine, through Bluetooth. I can work at Amazon and use Amazon as a vector to attack. I can use either of the county servers as a vector to attack. I can use any one of those machines as a vector to attack any other machine, because functionally they're all on the same network. If they're using hard wires in a building, like, say, they're using a polling place in a school, and they're just going to use the school's LAN as their way to get to the internet, then all I have to do is compromise any part of an elementary school's local area network in order to attack voting machines and attack every voting machine in the building that way? Excuse me? Couldn't get any easier than that. You're giving me... Like, if I decided to attack a polling place, to launch a cyber attack against a polling place, which I personally can do, I'm literally down to selecting mode of attack based on personal convenience. I'm going to do an Arnold Schwarzenegger impression and say, "I could drive any one of my Hummers through those loopholes." As you said about Arianna Huffington and taxes.
All right. So we're talking to Jerry Bellow here about the new e-polling books that'll be demonstrated, utilized in the next election, fall.
I'd like to go one step further on that, Bob. When I say I could do it, I am not a great hacker. I am... at best, a Midland grade computer security professional. We're not talking about difficult attacks that require brilliance.
All right, so it sounds like there's a bad design in the program, but 2 years ago we wrote about essentially secret, customized, experimental software patches that were being put by ES&S. And we now know in at least 20 counties, so we would have better election night reporting, or the Secretary of State would have better election night reporting. Should we be concerned with this old story? My understanding is all 88 counties now will be required to report by precinct on election night, and 65 of them have various schedules. And the largest counties, including interesting and controversial Republican strongholds in the southwest of this state, Claremont, Butler, Warren, will be reporting every 15 minutes at the precinct levels. Should we be concerned with this, put on your computer security hat. Is this something to worry about?
Yes. Anytime that I don't see everything that's happening, I grow suspicious. Right.
And this
automatically.
This is for the Secretary of State's eyes only, is it not?
Well, let's go to the videotape. The Free Press broke this story 2 years ago. You were a candidate and you sued over this software.
Both in federal and state court.
And, if I remember correctly, having sat in the courtroom trying to take notes, ES&S claimed that this was for the press.
For the press, and to make it easier to get the information out. But yes, to the press specifically.
And, you know, I called up the Secretary of State's office and I said... Okay, I have your file format all here. I understand how to do this. You know, I can code. I'd like to do election night reporting. I'd like to have this on the Free Press's website. I'd like people to know how their precinct's doing, how their county's doing, how their... You have all this information. You can give this information to me. All I have to do is make a web user interface that allows, that makes it visually attractive and informative to the Free Press Online reader. Okay, let's make this arrangement, Secretary of State Office Press guy, Matt McClellan. And he's like, we can't do that for you. And I'm like, excuse me? He's like, well, we're not getting precinct-level data. Well, yes, you are.
But the directive clearly requires precinct-level data in certain statewide issues, offices, and for state reps and state senators. It's right in their directive, is it not?
That's clear, and also the software's reporting everything. It's there. I know what format it's in. I know how many bytes per record. I know how many bytes per field and per record. You know, this is not difficult to handle software. It's a badly grafted front end slapped on top of RM COBOL. I mean, this is stuff that I could have written 20 years ago.
So what's the real problem with the election night reporting system? Why should any voter in Ohio be concerned?
Well, first of all, any taxpayer should be annoyed that they paid for it, because I could buy something off the shelf for free that would do it.
But they had to pay for ES&S to go down to the county levels and integrate this with the central tabulators.
I could have called every county person and walk them through it on the phone. Open up your Internet Explorer, click here, click download, click install, you're done. Very similar products of converting a comma-separated value file into an XML file are available for free.
And this is what Michael Donahoe said in 2012, the computer expert, certified, by the way, by that strange agency, the NSA, said the same thing. A retired NSA computer expert said, why don't you just download it for free? And why don't you simply put it solely on the Secretary of State's computers? Why would you put it on the county computers?
Well, they allege it's for the press so that they can put it in a more visually attractive format that the press can then put on their website and use.
But my understanding is that a professor at OSU, Greg Kilcup, attempted to get the information, and it took him a year to even post the precinct-level data out of John Husted's Secretary of State office.
Well, that's not an engineering problem. That's a social problem. And there's a difference. I mean, if they're going to sit there with a straight face and tell me that they cannot post a file in a year, and they cannot convert a file in a year, I'm going to ask them what the hell they're doing.
All right, wrapping up here in the studio, this is the Other Side of the News. One last question, is there any risk that anyone could steal an election or any value to having this precinct-level data all to yourself?
Yes, I can use the precinct-level data to know which votes to change. The problem with rigging an election is making the rigged bogus result in any way believable.
Yeah, to make it look plausible.
Right. Having access to a running total of the precinct level data not only tells me how many votes I need to flip, but which votes and where.
So you don't get that 130% voter turnout. We're out of time. Thank you, Jerry Bello. This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news. Hope to see you on Tuesday at Shadowbox 503 South High, 5 o'clock. Thanks, Jerry.
No problem, brother.